ahead and get started. I'm sure the mayor will be joining us shortly. He probably got caught behind a school bus like I did, and it gives you an extra minute or two of sitting and thinking about things. It's Thursday, March 6th, and we are in our study session. We have seven items on the agenda, and the first one is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on allowing community organizations to apply art wraps to city traffic control boxes. Good morning, Mary. How are you?
Good morning. My name is Mary Bruman, and I'm in my capacity here of overseeing the Neighborhood Outreach Office. And we would like to do a presentation on the art wrap. And today I have Joellen McNamara, who's the coordinator, who did a lot of the research for this project. And we also have Dave Richens, who's also available if you have questions in the presentation. So Joellen's going to go ahead and start.
Yes, good morning. The kind of background behind the art wraps project, well, the purpose of the project, I'm sorry. We're hoping to seek some direction from City Council whether or not you would want us to pursue going forward and establishing the art wraps program. And we wanted also to have the approval of the application and review process if you did decide that we would move forward and establish this program. The background of the art wraps program is Dave Richens, the executive director of the local CDC, came to us wanting to establish a program where he could wrap the utility, traffic control boxes in his area to make it a destination location environment. West Mesa CDC established their budget. They also looked at a possible collaboration with Arizona State University. There's a group there that's interested in looking at the materials that they use to use this cling wrap around these traffic control boxes. So with that in mind, Neighborhood Services decided to go ahead and draft a preliminary idea of what this project would look like if we decided to move forward, if the council decided to move forward with it. This is the exhibit. This is not an actual proposed design for the boxes. It's just an idea of what the designs would look like if they were to actually wrap the boxes. We're proposing a very simple application process, very much like the bridge designs. We would have our volunteer coordinator work as a facilitator of the application process. It would be reviewed by Neighborhood Services. Transportation would be involved only to make sure that the boxes, once wrapped, didn't have anything stopping the box from being normally utilized, so that there weren't any coverings that were stopping hinges or doors or making sure everything still continued to work. We would report to City Council members as long as that's what you wanted us to do, and we'd have an answer to the applicant within 15 days. At the committee, Councilman Truitt had talked about having design review also look at the submissions. In talking to Director Wesley, he had stated that the design review staff is actually not art trained, and that he was somewhat hesitant in having them look at these just because that's not their... I'm sorry?
And I am?
No, it was just his answer. And that that was his concern, is that their background is in structural and codified information that is actually part of the city code for structures and architecture, and they're not focused on art. They're really just focused on.
Well, I just want to clarify. I think what I said when we were at the committee meeting was not necessarily that design review would look at it in addition to. It was in lieu of. I just didn't think that this was something the council members needed to get involved in. I said, well, you've got a design board already. Let the design board be involved, not the council members micromanaging the process.
Good idea.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was up in that direction that we spoke to Director Wesley and said, and that was his concern. City Council decided that you did want design review to look at these projects, that would slow down the process somewhat because design review has meetings about once a month. So we would just have to take into consideration that addition of time for the application process. Sponsorship organizations, one of the other questions during the committee was that why would there be any problem with organizations other than 501c3s being sponsorship organizations, and in talking to the city attorney's office, we realized that there really isn't another problem. The only consideration we would have to make sure is that they would be capable of being financially and legally capable of indemnifying the city should anything happen to the wrap or because of the wrap. Those would be our only concerns. So it would either probably need to be an incorporated organization, or they would need a partner that was an incorporated organization so they would be capable of indemnifying us. The proposed design guidelines, designs to be original works with permission from the artist. We want to make sure there's no advertising or the perception of advertising. We don't want anything that looks like something to make it could be advertising, and making sure that all applicable laws are followed in the process of all of this. The affixing process, it's a pretty simple application. It's actually, there aren't any special tools, there aren't any special adhesives or anything. The wraps just go on the box, and they just as simply come off the box by hand. We would just propose that the affixing time would have to be scheduled with our volunteer coordinator to make sure that what's going on the box is what was promised would go on the box. No, there's no surprises, and traffic would want to look at it to make sure that nothing is being obstructed. One small concern was that if in the process of affixing it, if any of the boxes were too close to the street, that it might obstruct traffic for that small amount of time while they were affixing the wrap, to make sure that they contact the city to make sure that we assure that traffic continues to flow wherever they're doing this. We don't perceive that that's going to be a problem, but we don't know in the long term where they're going to look at boxes being. Proposed maintenance plan. If damage occurs, that staff would notify the sponsoring organization. They would be responsible for replacing the wrap or removing the wrap completely. They're graffiti resistant. That's a major component of why it's somewhat interesting for us to do, because they allow graffiti to be immediately wiped off. And in the event that there would be some kind of law enforcement and that some kind of graffiti wouldn't be able to be removed that might be offensive to the community in a law enforcement environment, we would just let the sponsoring organizations know that in those cases, they would have to be removed within 24 hours. There would not be a 10-day lag time for those. We don't perceive that those would be a concern, but we just want to make sure that we cover that in the process of this. Proposed pilot project, we wanted to, just for this first year, limited to the 6 locations during this first year pilot program to see if it's something that the city would want to continue. If city council decided we would move forward with the pilot project, we would also suggest that there be approval of just 4 or 5 designs total to pick from that, and that would be those would be the designs to look at for the longevity of the program. The volunteer coordinator at Neighborhood Services would facilitate the application process, the design approval, and the fixing of the wraps. And while we're in the middle of this pilot program year is when we would try to calculate what we would be calculating, what the actual cost of staff time would be. We believe it's going to be fairly minimal, but we'd want to make sure before and I'm sure council would want to know if we were to actually move forward and establish this as a permanent program. And that's it.
Mayor, real quickly, the reason I think that we suggested the one process is that's consistent with the way we define the process for the painting of bridges and abutments. So we were really just trying to be consistent with the existing process. Now we can change that, but that's where that proposal came from. It was just trying to be consistent with what's already in place today.
And what's the bridge process again?
The one where we go to, well, go ahead and explain it. You go to the council member and.
Katie Brown, our volunteer coordinator, actually handles most of that. That's a volunteer project where organizations approach the city to paint bridges that are in specific areas, and they have a specific color palette to pick from, and then they can submit designs.
To who and who approves?
The council members are involved in reviewing that.
Correct.
That's the way
right.
It's been done.
So if the council member in any district likes the design and they want to paint a bridge, they can go do it?
You could work with Katie Brown, our volunteer coordinator, who would establish a volunteer group to help with
that. So it's not set up just the West Mesa area. It's any place in the city.
At this time, it is in the West Mesa area. And I know that there was a palette, there was a lot of previous discussion regarding a palette and a design, and the council had a say-so in that area. But as it stands right now, it is in that one area.
But the process is available to any district.
Yes, absolutely.
The answer, I think you're being given, is that's where it's only been done. But the process that's outlined, I guess what I was trying to show is that the process that we were suggesting here was consistent with the one that this council has already approved for the painting of bridges and abutments. But we can change that, but that's where it came from.
Okay. And the recommendation from the, I have the minutes here from the Neighborhood Services Committee. Somebody want to, I know it was brought forward, there was some discussion. That's Member Truitt.
In support of the idea, discussed it all, but I think it was just that I just didn't feel like we needed to get involved in looking at wraps on traffic signal control boxes. And the only reason I suggested DR board is that in my role that over the years when I've been on the Gilbert Design Review Board, they have often asked not the whole board, but a person to volunteer and provide input for certain things. For example, when they were coming up with the theming for their walls along the freeway, I sat on the group that with other staff members to look at and review and decide upon theming for the walls and stuff. So I wasn't really thinking of these things going through an application process and a review process through the design review board so much as maybe having one person on that board who's supposed to be aesthetic. You know, I'm not talking about code compliance and structures here and whatever. These are architects and things that have training in design. You know, that maybe they're just a volunteer as part of their board duties, and they are a liaison, and maybe they, if you want somebody to look at it besides the staff. I don't know that anybody needs to look at it besides the staff. I'm just saying if we need somebody, that's where I would go.
Okay, you want to forward a suggestion here for a vote on this? Is that where we need to go this morning?
Mayor, we would like to get some direction. I think what the proposal is, too, that this initial pilot program, was it four or five, six, come up with six preferred or choices, I guess is the best word. And maybe that would be a good idea to maybe have a group of staff and someone from DRB or someone from wherever to help kind of select those and then make those available for the community to choose from.
Okay. I would assume that most of the boxes are, that I've just driven down the street to look at, don't affect a residential home. So there would be no contact with the neighbors that abut the intersection that this affects. Because if you do one in bright orange and something else, and it can,
what we were being asked by the local CDC was just that we consider allowing the pilot project to be in the Main Street area, in the West Mesa CDC service locations. So I don't think, it's certainly if that's the direction from the council, then we would explain to him that for the pilot project, it would need to be just in the Main Street corridor areas.
All right, so if somebody has a homeowners association, they don't have to talk to the homeowners association to do something that's off the homeowners palette to do whatever they want on the, because it's city right-of-way, right?
So what city right-of-way, correct.
At this point, what you're asking then, we could put that in the recommendations. It seems that it is a concern that we would ask the homeowner association that they would have.
So at least the immediate neighbors that they thought they would be affected by it.
Sure. We could put that in the process, add it in the guidelines.
I was thinking that maybe we should have done that to the neighbors that look out on that bridge abutment on Alma School Road. That's what I was kind of alluding to. All right. You want to try a motion, Mr. Truitt? All right, Vice Mayor?
I'm not trying a motion. I have a couple of questions.
All right.
When I look at this, the side of your, in your illustration, the side of the box doesn't have anything on it. Does it?
Well, it could go all the way around. The wrap could go all the way around.
Okay, I want to make sure, because the purpose of this has to do with graffiti. So the wrap is going to encompass the entire thing.
It also go over the top.
Okay.
It would go around the box and over the top. It's just, I think we were somewhat limited in the program that we were attempting to use for an example of what it
understood.
Might look
like. And that's fine. I just wanted to clarify that. And the second thing is, I like what Council Member Truitt said about using somebody from the DR board. I don't think anybody runs for council thinking, gosh, I sure hope I get to pick the walls for the freeway or the artwork for whatever. And while they may not be artistically trained, I would actually argue that point. I think many of the people on our DR board do have artistic training in terms of their architecture background. So I would prefer that we do that. I'm fine with it being one person or, you know, however we want to do it. So whatever you want to do in your motion, Daryl, is fine. But I would just as soon, you know, as a council member, I don't want to be the one who's sitting there doing that. I do agree with the mayor that you need to talk to the surrounding folks.
Other comments? Want to try to wrap this one up?
Okay, I'll make it.
All right, never mind.
It's too early in the morning.
I almost missed that.
It is too early in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll make a motion that we support the recommendations of the staff as presented herein with the following additions, and that is that the solicit a member of the design review board to be involved in the review of the designs for the initial for the pilot project, and that where applicable, contact with local homeowners association be included in the application approval process.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Item number two is hear presentation, discuss and provide direction on Pinal County tax issues.
Mayor, Council, we're here to talk about Pinal County taxes. When the city purchased Pinal County Farms in 1985, at the same time, Scottsdale and Phoenix were also purchasing farms. It caused a lot of concern in rural America because the cities aren't subjected to the taxes. To help out with that, since 1985, Mesa has voluntarily paid the property taxes. A couple years after that, the state legislature passed some laws that said the voluntary tax was mandatory if you wanted to transfer water from the farms up to Mesa. So it's, even though it's voluntary, in essence, it's been mandatory. Now that we've decided to not use the water, it's again voluntary as to whether we pay it.
The decision to not use the water, I know we've talked about selling off the property, but I don't think that that decision is totally finalized until that last part of the land is sold. So,
okay, that would make a difference in it then.
All right.
Because the law states that we have to pay the taxes in order to transfer the water. This is a typical tax bill, our 2007 tax bill. And the issues that we're talking about is the Pinal County taxes. There's two items in the tax bill for Central Arizona Irrigation District and Hohogan District. These are assessment fees. Those have to be paid, even though they're in the tax bill. They're not taxes themselves. They have to be paid in order for our farms to get water. So those are mandatory pretty much no matter what in order to keep farming the land. Also in your packet is the history of taxes that we've paid. And I'll just go over to what's happened to us is because of the land values between, you can see it kind of goes up and down a little bit throughout the years, but from 2006 to 2007, the taxes went up substantially, not quite doubled, but came close to it. And so the issue to talk about now is whether you want to continue to pay the tax bills to Pinal County. We also broke out the Katy and the Hohokam. We do need to keep paying those. So the one to discuss is the tax bill itself, which is $364,000.
Okay. And I guess there's no way to have it both ways. What happens if we, the reason I'm concerned about the water issue is there's still some discussion about Pinal County and how much, if any, or some, or how that state trust land reform will take place, and whether the city of Mesa ever wants to consider additional land out in Pinal County besides the 10 square miles. If we did, then I think we'd probably have to tap into the resources of the water farm. I don't know how important it is to keep that as a still as a viable option as we're at the table doing discussions on how that's going to develop. I know we've had discussions about selling off the real estate, and I, you know, kind of occur overall that seems a more likely pattern. So the expense, I guess this just adds an expense to hold it if you're going to do it. But if, in fact, we decided we're not going to transfer, is there any way to go back and retroactively pay the taxes so that then you can go back to the transfer aspect? Can you have it both ways?
I need to get some legal help on that. I think the answer is yes. There's wording within the statute to do that.
Because then I don't see a downside in moving forward with this. If we could then pay the back taxes and some interest to get back to our original position.
And Mayor, members of the council, Donna Bronson from the City Attorney's Office, this is set up under the state statute as an annual election, so you can make this decision every year. We have to send a letter April 1st, and if there's no intention right now that there's going to be any transfer of water, then there's no legal requirement to pay this voluntary tax. Of course, if you'll have an opportunity to change your mind each spring while we still have property in Pinal County.
And Mayor, can I just...
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's... And Mayor, may say something very clearly here for our friends in Pinal County. What we're recommending is... let me make sure I don't say this wrong. It's not that we're recommending to not pay our taxes voluntarily. Is that we're suggesting to the council is that we cap it where it is today. So there's still going to be... Now, I know, not sure that resolves the issue about being discussed, but I don't want the headline in Pinal County to be that the city of Mace has decided not to pay or voluntarily pay taxes. What we're saying is we want to cap it at where it is today. We will communicate that to the taxing districts, who, by the way, when they're calculating their expected taxes, this is not included in that calculation. So I just want to make, I was just trying to make clarification is we are still going to pay. We're just saying at this point, at the level that's being identified here, well, what we're saying is going forward, we're going to try to keep it. We're going to stop at this level right now. That's what we're proposing. Now, we could go to zero, but that's not what we're recommending.
Right. And I guess I would question whether there might be a little bit more of a hybrid as we have a cap or a level that we're looking for, but we're also selling off land that's now then going to be taxed. It used to be city land.
Right.
I mean, there's an executive session thing for $1,250,000. So, in effect, Pinal County from the Mesa land would get as much or more than...
Right. Yeah, no.
Probably the assessment anyway, because there's a current value to it. And I'm not sure what the assessment would be on $1,250,000. Because I don't know their tax rates. But that, you know, if we sell that and then that's the market value, that's probably going to make up a fair amount of that chunk of that difference between the $300,000 and the $700,000.
Well, it's that sale, if you approve it, is basically 38 acres out of 11,606. It's pretty much prorated across the board, so it'll have actually a minor impact on it.
But it's 1/20th of the value of the land down there. If we're talking about $20-some million or one at the purchase price of the land, wasn't the purchase price in the original assessment of the $300
million? Oh, back. Oh.
$29 million.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
Ultimately, Mayor, I think your point is correct. It will mean more to them from a tax basis, not just because, I mean, our currently taxes ag use, correct?
Correct.
And most of what we're selling these for is someone who's going to be using it for manufacturing or putting some improvements on it. So there's where their value increases will be realized for the taxing agencies.
Okay. How was the Sunbelt Refinery property taxed before?
It had a zoning change. It's rolled in with our taxes. We pay the property tax on the Sunbelt Refinery. The lessee pays the property tax on the improvements.
Okay, but on the Sunbelt Refinery portion, was it evaluated higher because it was developed as industrial property?
It's just rolled into Sunbelt Refinery is 38 acres out. It's, you can see the bill. It's not broken out. We have 11,606 acres. Sunbelt Refinery is just simply 38 acres of that.
At the same assessment level per acre?
Yes.
Right. But now you've established a price for that, which is, I mean, if you sold everything down there at that price, your tax bill would be quite a bit larger, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. I think it's when they decide to zone it for some use is when that property tax will change.
Right. It's just like Maricopa County. It's the assessed value. So as the property is developed, the assessed value goes up.
And I'm trying to make an argument for Coolidge and that area down there that we're good neighbors, and in effect, as we're transferring, selling land off and it's going to another use, it's already at a higher tax. So overall, the city of Mesa is not is contributing to that economy down there. So that's, and I'm not quite sure that the numbers work. That's why I was trying to figure out what it would change from ag to industrial, that we could already show that as we sell this off, their tax base will increase, so they're really not being harmed if we were to freeze it. But I don't know if we've gone far enough on projections of land sales over the next 10 years to know that that's the case.
And that is the case, but we also don't know if the tax bills will continue to go up. We've plateaued, land values have dropped, and we're based on assessed values. So, but there's also a lag in the taxing and the values and so forth. So whether next year it'll go up again, probably won't drop, but it may not go up again. So if we plateau it here, it may not really have much of an effect for the next couple of years.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm in favor of plateauing it because I know there's going to be some sales, and they're going to derive some additional taxable base because it's going to be marketed instead of ag at something higher and better use for them. So that'd be my comment. Vice Mayor.
And in addition to that, if you look at the other properties that we've entered into a contract to sell, we're creating jobs down there, which I think might be even more valuable than the tax stuff here. My question goes back to the law, because what I heard you saying was that when we want to transfer water, we have to pay the tax on the land, because they were worried about, you know, just having all of this transferred out and no value. Had this, if we sell off part of it, but we keep part of it for its water rights, and at some point in time we decide to use those water rights, two questions. One is, if we don't transfer the water rights out of Pinal County, do you then have the taxation issue if the water is remaining in Pinal County? And the second question is, would you pay the tax just on the portion of land that you are using the water rights from and not on the rest of the land? And did that question make sense?
Yes, Mayor, the question made sense. We can look into that. That wasn't the question before us, although the statute is specifically designed to handle the inequities of transferring water out of a county. So if I were to guess, based on my reading of it in the past, there would be no impact on the tax situation until we decided to, just dealing with those acres that we're going to transfer water from, and only if we're going to transfer it out. But I'd want to confirm that, because that really wasn't the question before us.
Okay, and the other question, it would just be the acres that we were wanting to transfer water off of. So if we get to some place where we say, okay, we're going to keep one-third, and I'm just making up numbers here, keeping one-third of the acreage for the water rights, two-thirds we're going to, you know, look at selling off over time, then it would just be the one-third that would be subject to the taxation.
That's a logical interpretation. I don't believe that anyone was really anticipating that when these statutes were passed, but that's certainly a logical approach.
So pretty much I should ignore it, because if it's logical, it's probably not correct in the law. Is that what you're telling me? Okay, thank you.
The staff recommendation was to freeze it. We have the option of not paying anything, I believe.
Correct, yes.
And we would also have the option of like inflating it, cost of living inflation, or some kind of government inflation index, so that they aren't penalized, and as their costs go up, at least ours goes out with some type of index. So I guess there's multiple suggestions that we can come forward with here today.
That's correct.
We address it every year, though.
Right.
We can address it every year.
Yes. We send a letter to the state by April 1st of every year. notifying them what we're going to do so we could address it every year.
Okay. Carol.
A couple of questions. One, another option I would consider is freezing it at the 2006 rate. I mean, I don't know that we've created any impact, additional need for services, et cetera, to pay twice as much this year as we paid last year, other than the fact that rapid land bidding has happened out there or whatever. I wonder, have we looked very much into why this assessment went up this much? And I can't imagine what because it's agricultural property. I don't know what the average farmer out there is going to do that his property taxes have doubled, and he's got his whole cash flow and business operation plan based on another model.
That's true. So a couple of things you have to look at is that the land jumped substantially in these couple of years. Let me pick a year. 2003, for example, I think the land was probably worth $5,000 an acre. The land now is worth, we're going into escrows at $50,000 an acre. So it's jumped substantially. It's all ag land. The farmers would be faced with exactly the same thing we are, with the exception that we own 18 square miles of land. And a farmer usually owns hundreds, maybe 1,000 or 2 acres.
It's all relative. If he's trying to make a living off of 100 acres, he's got so many thousands of dollars worth of taxes built into his model. I guess that the other point I would make in general about taxes and these kinds of things is these things support an operation of a government. And just because the land values went up doesn't mean they need twice as much taxes to operate the same government they were operating the year before. So I think that's part of the principle, I guess, I'm getting at.
We don't know. We've never experienced that.
Right. Scott.
I want to make a comment on that. Then it's the job of that county government to set the tax rate to raise just enough revenue to provide the services they need. Mm-hmm. And if they kept the rate up, what are they doing with the extra money on that assumption? Has this land been assessed recently with the market declines? I remember I just got a tax statement that reduced my tax burden from the county. So has Pinal County reassessed the value of this land based on these market changes?
I'm sure they have. We haven't got the bill yet. This is our 2007 bill. We've paid half of it so far. That's what we would hope would happen in the next tax year. When we get the next bill, we would hope that it's dropped and that this isn't an issue, but I don't know that that's going to happen.
Did I pay my house, did I pay my 2007 bill to the county already?
Half of it.
Half of it?
Yeah, the other half to do in November, I think.
And that will be based on what my house is reassessed at?
No, he's the number one. You're answering the question for Pinal County,
right?
Not
no.
For the councilman.
We don't. Or know you? Right. Did you pay your half? I mean, I'm at conceptually here. As a taxpayer to Maricopa County, have you paid your entire tax bill?
I don't know. It's in my mortgage.
Me too. Okay.
I think Council, I think what's happening here, the values, the rate you're seeing here, is reflective of, you know, there's always a lag in the period of the assessed value. So most likely we're paying the assessed values that were in play when the market was very hot, a year and a half, 2 years ago in Pinal County. And so when we talk about, it's ag land, but that same ag land, those ranchers and farmers were flipping that property, you know, to $40,000, $50,000 an acre. And that's where we are probably being assessed at this point, what we're seeing today. Now, maybe 2 years from now, we'll see the reduction because of the decline in prices.
Have we approached or done anything with our Intergov folks to make sure that those assessments are done or put some pressure on Pinal County to have that land reassessed?
Yes, we have. We worked with our farm management company to take a look at the values and make sure the values are correct or reasonable anyway, and frankly, they are. I didn't bring it with me. I think the value we're being assessed on is something like $8,000 an acre. So the values they're using are reasonable. We did look at protesting the raid and doing different things, but it didn't look like we would get anywhere with it. The values seemed to be pretty good.
Okay. I'm a little torn on buying land as a municipality in somebody's other jurisdiction and not paying some in-lieu taxes because you're using some type of benefits. But I really don't mind locking it into some type of inflation increase or something, or doing the trade-off when you sell land off and it's now commercially valued, look at what that's generating for that county. So I'd like to be a good neighbor with them down there in some manner, and I'm not quite sure how to craft that into a proposal to do the property. I don't mind, you know, kind of locking ours at some value, but I'd like to do a side sheet to show what land we've sold off and what they're getting for it, and see if that doesn't make up the difference by itself. And I haven't, you know, seen that type of information. So that's kind of where I'm leaning, at least.
So, Mayor, as we sell the property, then we could show them that kind of offsetting benefit.
Right.
Well, I think we could do, I mean, we would come, we could probably just come back each year at this time before we have to make that April notice and show that to the council. So if that's a proposal, I think that'd be fine too. We just wanted, for budgeting purposes too, these numbers are really jumping on us. And as you can imagine, under our times, these kind of increases are sometimes very difficult to absorb. So that's part of where we are.
Then I would suggest that in the interim, if we're not quite sure on what we've sold off and what that's bringing in, that we lock in a number of 300,000 or whatever it was, and then just inflate it until we have some offset with that, would be my suggestion. Okay. So what other ideas do we have coming forward?
Want to
give that a try? What was the rate that was suggested by staff that we lock in at?
This year's rate, which is $364,601.34.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look at that rate, and then if you can do a little computation on any land that's been sold and what it would be assessed at, and then also do a computation on an inflation on that at whatever the 3.4% or whatever our current inflation rate is, and if the 3.4 is more than what the sold off new assessed value is for like Sunbelt or whoever, that's not an example, we haven't done that one yet, then we pay the higher of the two.
Okay.
I mean, not pay the higher, we would use the higher of the two.
Okay.
So if we would be at like 350,000, and if it's 400,000 or 500,000 being collected from properties we used to own, then we stay at the 350. If it's not, okay. If it's 340, then we go to the 350.
Make up the difference. Okay.
So we at least do the inflation index on the payments.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I just don't think that it's fair to the Pinal County area down there to have somebody that we complain about SRP and not paying in lieu, and I'd hate to have the same program from the city. So that'd be my suggestion. Vice Mayor?
I just have a question here. We're in the process of paying the 2007 tax bill. You're asking us to do this because when is the 2008 tax bill coming? November?
I think it's after the first of the year. We pay the second half of this in November, so it'd be after the first of the year.
But Doug, you said we have to give notice by April 1st.
We have to give notice by April 1st.
Okay, but you were paying taxes a year behind, so we'd pay 2007 tax bill in 2008, right?
Yes.
I just want to make this clear.
Yes.
So from the 2006 tax bill to the 2007 tax bill, we saw an increase of more than 50%.
Yes.
And so, Mayor, you're recommending that we take that 50%. And so my question is, I'm going to go back to kind of what Daryl was asking about, and that is, you know, why are we deciding that this is the year? What makes this year the baseline?
I guess because staff brought it up and looking for direction.
Yeah, well, we saw that increase, and we're concerned about the future, and we're trying to create a little more predictable
I'm
number.
Not sure that I am comfortable retroactively going back another year. And I was fairly comfortable just paying them as we went forward because I just didn't want somebody to, you know, buy land in Mesa and say it's government, so provide all the services, but you get no income. I didn't think that was fair either.
And I agree with you, Mayor, on that front. My concern is that I think that the reason we're seeing these values go up is because of the flipping. I don't think it's real. you know, a real thing that's going on here. So I'm okay with what you proposed. I just want to look at this again. I'm just wondering, as values have gone down, yes, we're selling this specific parcel of property that has very specific uses on the Sunbelt refinery for that much money. But if you look at a lot of that land there, a lot of that land will be designated for housing. And the value of land for housing right now has not gone up. It has, in fact, gone down. And so my concern is that our tax bill, we aren't capping this and saying we're never going to pay less than this. I would like to look at this, we're looking at an upside.
No, we're only looking at a ceiling, not a floor.
Right, because I think that we ought to go back and look at potentially getting it reevaluated based on what we're really seeing land values being for housing.
Sure.
But I think you mentioned that the underlying value is about $8,000 an acre.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So the potential for more upside's there.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think it's going below that. So, all right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. That's the suggestion. Do we need a motion to that effect? Are you going to?
Yeah, we're fine.
All right. Okay, let's go on to number three then, which is hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on a residential rental property inspection program.
What? On what?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're here this morning. My name is Ray Villa. I'm the Neighborhood Services Director. And with me is Mike Renshaw, the Code Compliance Director. And we're here this morning to present a proposal and seek direction from the Council regarding the establishment of a rental inspection program. Mike Renshaw is going to be doing the presentation this morning.
Morning, Mayor, members of Council. In November of 2007, Council directed staff to research the development or creation of a potential rental property interior inspection program. Council at that time wanted to consider placing this perhaps on the November 2008 ballot. Wanted to emphasize the fact that this type of an ordinance would require, due to our existing city charter under Section 408B, that type of a measure be put out to the qualified electors in the city. Currently, also wanted to point out there is an existing state statute under Title 9-1302A that does allow cities and towns in the state of Arizona to create an interior rental inspection program.
Mike?
Yes.
Can I step in and explain a little bit about the charter and the state statute?
Please do. Please do.
Mayor and Council, as you know, our charter prohibits the city from adopting and implementing a housing code unless that housing code is approved by the voters. The mechanism for doing this would be for the staff to present, if Council's interested in pursuing this, the staff would draft and bring forward an ordinance for Council consideration. If the Council approved the ordinance, it would be subject to voter approval. So we would have Council consider this, and if Council is interested in going forward, it would be placed on the November 2008 ballot, if that's Council's desire. The resolution that was adopted by Council back in November had language that would allow the Council to add this to the November 2008 election, so we can still meet that time frame. Under the state statute, there's two different programs that other cities are authorized to use. One is a program where it's basically complaint-based, so if someone files a complaint about a certain rental property, the city, if it meets certain criteria, the city can go in and do an inspection. The other program that is established under state statute is a citywide program, which it contemplates a periodic inspection of all rental properties in the city. I think what you're going to hear from staff here is staff is recommending the individual program. So if a complaint is filed and if certain criteria are met, it would then give the city authority to go in and do an interior inspection.
Yes.
Who has to file the complaint?
It can be filed by anyone, but if a complaint is filed, again, certain criteria would have to be met before this the city would be authorized to go in. For example, let me back up just a minute also. if council wants to go forward and say, we want the same authority that the state now has, so we would basically mirror the language in the state statute, you would have to, we're looking for direction. Do you want us to write an ordinance that mirrors state statute? And then if, let's say, 3 years from now, the state statute changes, the city of Mesa's authority would not change because we have an ordinance that specifically mirrors state statute now. Or staff could bring forward an ordinance that says basically any authority provided by the state. The city has the same authority as authorized by the state. Then 3 years from now, if the state statute changes, the city of Mesa's authority would also change. Okay, but Councilmember Summers, getting back to your question, somebody files a complaint. Under the current state statute, it says that an interior inspection is permitted if the individual residential rental property code compliance were to find the exterior inspection meets any one of six different criteria. One is if the conditions found material affect the health safety of the occupants. Second criteria is if a significant history of crime is at the property, a documented history of building code violations, the owner repeatedly fails to comply with the building code, there is probable cause that the property is not in compliance with the building code, or the complaint, you have to also have to have consent of the tenant or the owner. So if you have any of one of those criteria, then the city can go in and do an interior inspection based on the complaint.
But again, that complaint can come from anybody.
Yes. But still, you would not be permitted to enter the property unless you had consent of the owner, the current tenant, or you had a court order.
Okay.
That's a current state law.
Yes.
Do that today?
No, Mesa cannot because of the charter prohibits any housing code that's not been adopted by the residents. So other cities can do it, but the city of Mesa cannot. That's why the question for council is, do you want us to go forward and seek voter approval to implement this program?
Does anyone else have authority to do it within the city of Mesa? Is there a county or a state agency that could do exactly what you just said inside the city of Mesa?
The county does have jurisdiction to enter property in the city of Mesa under this program. It's difficult because of the resources for the county right now. Our action team does work with the county, and they have been involved in some of the programs that the action team has been engaged in. But this would give the city of Mesa employees the authority to implement this program as opposed to seeking help from the county.
Who's going to pay for it?
The program? Turn that back over to Mike, Councilmember Struitt.
Thank you, Debbie.
Well, I guess my point would be, I think another option would be to enter an IGA with the county and just take the money you're going to spend. And anyway, go for it.
Well, Mayor Hucker, Councilmember Truitt, Debbie's correct in saying that Maricopa County Environmental Services has been a key player in the Action Team program over the past year and a half or so with regards to a lot of the projects. It's under very limited circumstances, though. It's my understanding their authority. Typically, we've used Environmental Services with the county to conduct interior inspections with regards to infestation issues. Hasn't really been used to address a lot of the more, what I consider to be more serious types of violations in terms of the systems, the electrical wiring, the plumbing, that sort of thing within the units.
Councilmember Truitt, I know they've been involved. I guess I would want to talk to the county. I have not gone through exactly under what conditions would they come to the city of Mesa. I know we have called them on the infestation issues and some issues that the action team have found. I'm not sure that they've said no, so I can't give you specifics on that today.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Back in November when the council gave, you know, direction that we could move forward with this, I continued working with Ms. Spinner, with the folks here that are sitting in front of you, Mike and Ray, and it isn't that this slum landlord law that we're looking at here, and that's what this is. This is a slum landlord law. It isn't that we would stop working with the county. We can continue working with the county, but we're addressing issues of crime. We're addressing issues of blight and deterioration and prioritization. As you get further in this presentation, you're going to see prioritization has to occur. One of the conversations we had as we sat down and worked on this was that the state statute actually allows you to do a routine inspection. We aren't looking for that. The staff isn't proposing that. I wouldn't suggest that because the costs involved are costs that we don't want to bear. But we're talking about situations where we have people, if you look at that list that Debbie just read, these are issues where we have landlords who are really letting things go in a whole host of ways, and they're having an impact on us financially in terms of police, in terms of fire, and so it will be a prioritization. We are not allowed to charge for this under state law, but if you take care of the problems, the underlying problems, hopefully we're going to benefit financially because of the police and fire service issues that we deal with. So I don't see this as excluding our working with the county. I see this as giving our action team another, and I hate to say tool in the toolbox because it's so overused, but this slum landlord law is something that I think would be helpful to Mesa. And having said that, I know I got off on your presentation, but I wanted to make sure that everybody understood in this part of the discussion that we had talked about the two possibilities in the state code, and we're not looking at going out and inspecting everybody's property. This is being directed at what I'm going to call slum landlords.
Why don't we go through the PowerPoint presentation?
Thank you. Just wanted to take a few moments briefly to talk about kind of the existing conditions. As has been discussed already, the action team, all coming together in our neighborhoods team, has been working probably for the past year and a half, 2 years. And the vast majority of the projects that they've been working on, like the Vice Mayor has just mentioned, have been with those properties that have been considered challenged, where PD sees a huge increase in the numbers of calls for service that they respond to. And basically, it is the symptoms of those types of things that we're responding to. When staff does have worked these projects at these particular multifamily rental properties, obviously it's based upon what we're seeing in terms of calls for service, but also exterior observations of some of the decline in some of these properties. What we have seen over the past 2 years, we've identified that there is a significant gap in our enforcement capability. And really, the goal is to ensure that the tenants have a safe and healthy environment in which to live. So we do see a significant gap in our ability to enforce and to provide that insurance. Staff recommends that we implement, as Ms. Spinner has said, an individual multifamily rental property interior inspection program versus the citywide program where there's a periodic inspection cycle. And again, the primary goal of this program is to address health and safety issues within those properties. Wanted to give a real brief snapshot, just kind of provide some perspective, some numbers. According to the 2006 American Community Survey, which is put out by the U.S. Census Bureau, City of Mesa has approximately 195,300 total housing units. Of that number, approximately 50,100 are reported multifamily rental units. And what we did is we looked at those structures, again, trying to fit the parameters of this program. We looked at those rental structures having two or more rental units within the structure. That number, 50,100, represents roughly about 25% of the total housing unit stock in the city. And again, just to highlight what staff is observing over the past couple of years at least is that the aging properties and lack of adequate exterior and interior maintenance just add to the issues and problems that we're seeing with regards to police responses to these properties, fire responses, code compliance issues that are occurring on the property, and just in general blight and other criminal activity within the area. And this type of activity has an impact not only on the current and future tenants, but also on the surrounding neighborhood. We receive multiple complaints from surrounding neighborhoods concerning many of our multifamily properties. And again, as already been discussed, a significant amount of city resources are being invested, used in order to react to the symptoms rather than, like the Vice Mayor pointed out, looking at the root causes of a lot of these issues. Next slide just shows some photographs that are fairly representative of some of the conditions that we're seeing while we're doing some of these inspections, while the action team is performing some of these inspections and whatnot. And again, based upon consent by the tenant or the property owner. You can see inadequate cooking facilities in the kitchen areas, some structural issues. The photograph in the upper right-hand corner displays some structural defects, the ceiling basically collapsing. And the bottom photo is actually within that same unit, and the structural defect actually did result in the collapse of that roof segment or ceiling. And again, Debbie had talked about the existing state law provisions. I think she read through this list, so I won't read through it again. There are certain criteria that have to be met. Again, the property has to exhibit exterior violations in order for us to conduct these types of inspections. And then that list of six different bullet points, conditions that materially affect the health and safety of the tenants, significant level of crime, documented history of the building code violations, owner repeatedly fails to comply with existing building code requirements. There's probable cause to believe that the property is not in compliance with the building code, and we must receive a complaint by either the owner or the tenant. Staff is recommending, as has already been discussed, that we establish an individual rental property inspection program. We recommend that the language of this ordinance be consistent or mirror the existing state statute, ARS 9-1302. We're seeking to apply this to only those multifamily rental properties which have two or more units. We're not looking at the single-family rental properties with regards to this program, and that it be based upon a complaint basis only, plus that consent of either the tenant or the property owner. These inspections would be done by the Code Compliance Division using existing resources. As the Vice Mayor indicated, there would be a need to prioritize our response to other types of nuisance violations in the city. Wanted this to be made clear to Council. We currently have one Code Compliance Officer who is certified under HQS, Housing Quality Standards. This basically provides some baseline certification with regards to conducting interior inspections. There's a checklist that this inspector would use once the inspection is being conducted that would allow him or her to go through the unit and make sure that these major systems and whatnot are operating properly. There's no major structural defects. And again, just to emphasize the point, if Council decided to go forward with this type of a program using the existing resources in code compliance, we would need to prioritize our response to the other types of violations that we respond to, the more common nuisance violations that that we typically respond to. And as we mentioned previously, this type of a ordinance would require the approval of the voters of the city. And Debbie, I believe you've already covered this slide. Is there anything else that you wanted to emphasize or talk about?
Well, I guess I'd maybe restate it just to make sure the council understands. If council wants to go forward and place this issue on the ballot, we will prepare an ordinance for council consideration. And if council approves that ordinance, it would then be placed on the ballot. If council wants to go forward with preparing an ordinance, there's two different ways to accomplish this. One is for us to actually take the language in the state statute and duplicate it in ordinance form so that this language would become the language in the Mesa City Code. If 3 years from now the state statute changes, the city of Mesa's authority would not change. Option two is to draft an ordinance which basically says that the city of Mesa is authorized to implement an individual residential rental property inspection program as defined in state statute. Then 3 years from now, if the state statute changes, then the city of Mesa authority would also change. So we need direction if council wants to move forward, what your preference is.
Okay, that concludes the presentation.
Just right. One additional comment, Mayor. We have spoken with representatives from the Association of Multi-Housing Association, AMA, and they're supportive of any program that we would adopt the language or represent the similar language to the state code. And if we set up a ordinance based on a complaint basis, they would be supportive of that.
All right, let's open it up for discussion and see what direction, and especially if we're gonna move forward, whether we do existing state statute or any authority authorized by the state, so it could be more fluid. Councilmember Jones.
Well, there's an obvious need for this, but I think it would be appropriate that we go with the second option in that as state statute changes, we don't have to go in and change our city code, so that we just have the language that allows it to follow what the state's doing.
Okay. Carol.
Yes, my question is, let's say we adopted the current state statute language, can we then change it in the future if we don't tie it to the second option? can we just amend and pick and choose parts, or do we have to go back to the electorate every time we want to change it unless we tie it to the second option?
Let me restate the question to see if I'm understanding it. If we go with option one, then if state statute changes again, and for example, if council likes the changes, we would then have to go back to the voters to have the voters consider the changes. If we went with option two, the city would be authorized, anytime state statute changes, the city now has that same amount of authority. That doesn't mean the council has to implement that authority. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
And if the authority became more limited by state law, which I could see happening, then we would have to, under either option, probably limit our authority.
Under option two, certainly the city's authority would then be limited.
Yeah, automatically.
Under option one, we'd have to take a look at the preemption issue to determine whether, because we're a charter city, we can have our own ordinances, but we cannot directly conflict with state statute. So it would depend on what the changes are.
My other question, and I know that this has probably been well discussed, is this like 99% of the problem if we limit this to multifamily, or is there a reason we limit it to multifamily? Because it seems to me like we've got a lot of single-family residential out there that's rented that could certainly have these same issues and probably more likely receive a complaint from a neighbor maybe than even the multifamily issues.
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Truitt, I can't say it's 99%, but I can't say it's the vast majority. And I was able, unfortunately, this is CompStat week, so my ability to gather some PD statistics was kind of limited. But I was able to get some information, and they do put out some statistics with regards to multifamily properties. And again, this is no indictment necessarily on multifamily properties, but the point is, what we've seen over the years is that a large percentage of their calls for service do result out of some of these properties, and there's three on their top 10 list that have significant calls for service that they respond to. And what we've seen over the past couple of years in working with the action team is that a lot of these same properties do have some significant both exterior violations with regards to the existing city code, as well as when we've had the opportunity to go inside, we've seen some significant issues on the inside. So we think that although there may not be a direct correlation, there's a correlation between the conditions, the declining conditions of some of these, not all, some of these properties, and the amount of crime that we're seeing.
I guess my question is, why limit it to the multifamily?
Does any authority authorized by state limit it to only multifamily?
No, it's my understanding that there is no limitation, no restriction.
The limitation there is individual residential rental property. So it would not necessarily be multifamily.
So if you go with any authority authorized by the state, it could, in fact, encompass either multifamily or single-family residential. So I think you've covered it, if that's the direction.
What I heard was the recommendation was
two or more units.
That is correct. That is the recommendation.
And we're in conflict.
We could draft the ordinance so that we're given the authority under the state statute, but we're limiting the how it is implemented. So if that's council's direction, I'm kind of talking off the top of my head here, but I think we could craft the language so that, yes, this is the criteria we're going to be using, but in the city of Mesa, it will only be applied to multifamily residential rental.
Why?
They want to expand it.
Oh, you want to expand it? Okay.
Why?
Sorry.
It's
then I was
question.
They're going the other way. Can you do it for both?
For
multifamily and single family, yes. All rentals.
Yes. Then we would simply adopt the language in the state statute, because the state statute just limits it to individual residential rental properties. It doesn't limit it to multifamily.
I just think there's
single family residential properties.
Move out of state, don't take care of their properties. Vice Mayor.
Well, and somebody recently made the point to me with the subprime mortgage issue you have.
Subprime?
Subslime.
Subslime.
That's what
okay.
My son calls it, the subslime problem. I think, though, that the point is that the change in the charter, if we go with option two, would reflect the state law. And then it would be up to the council, whoever the sitting council was, to decide what the implementation would be.
Is that true?
Well, yes, because the council can have authority to implement, but could choose not to implement.
But the voters are going to give us the authority to do both and then trust us to decide what to implement. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I was saying. Under option two, if what you're doing is, if you are saying, if what you put on the ballot is that we are adopting the state law, then, you know, and that we will remain consistent with the state law, then it would be up to the sitting council to determine. If you didn't put it in, you know, if what we're asking them to draft doesn't limit it to multifamily, if what we're doing is we're limiting it to multifamily by this council or whatever council is sitting decides what they're going to do, am I correct in that?
But Mayor, Vice Mayor, I think, but the point is you don't want to restrict. If the idea is to have all rental properties in, then we don't restrict that in the what goes forward to the voters.
Exactly.
When we come back, assuming it's been approved, then we can decide as far as resources and priorities where we spend our time.
That was the point I was making.
Although once you, if you have it in your ordinance, once you start getting complaints, you may have some obligation to act.
I don't disagree. I'm not saying we would ignore it. It's a priority issue.
You got people calling for code violations all the time.
We are pressed to respond to all calls today. Yes.
That's my point.
Well, and we prioritize. May I?
Sure.
We prioritize everything. I mean, we prioritize police services. We prioritize all of our response. And so, you know, this would be a matter, I believe, of prioritizing. And you're looking at the kinds of issues that we were talking about. And, of course, as we all know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, too. I mean, you know, we get complaints that people feel like we should have responded to, and when we look at them, when you apply the measure of the law, it doesn't match. So we've got all of that going on at the same time. But certainly, I believe our resources are limited. The prioritization is going to have to take place, whether it's multifamily with two only or whether we add single family into it.
Well, I would suggest to move this along that we consider adding to the ballot the question of authorizing the Mesa, giving the city of Mesa the same authority that is authorized by state law as far as residential inspection goes, and at this point not limit it to just multifamily. I think that there could be certainly at some point where you'd want to do residential rentals also, out-of-state ownership, the subprime, the whole thing. I think it also has an impact on neighborhoods, so I would not want to limit it. And I think that by doing number two, it gives you that not having to go back and having new ballot elections every 3 or 4 years if the state tweaks theirs. So it will also be a conformity from one community to the other. So people that have different rentals or live in different parts of the community and move from one to the other will have the same state laws. And I like that conformity issue as much as we can get it. So that would be my suggestion as we move forward in that manner. So let me go ahead and make that as a motion.
Second.
Anyone a second? Discussion on the motion? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. We'll see it on the ballot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's see now. The new council has to call that, don't they?
Or no. No.
Mayor, we will actually draft an ordinance, bring the ordinance back for council consideration. Council will approve it, and it will designate that it's subject to voter approval.
And the dates, though, I thought there was also something that doesn't the new council have a month in which they can either confirm or reject those suggestions?
They do. They have a month between when they take their positions and I think when the ballot language is required.
All right. I would also suggest that in that month period that this be considered by the new council because they're the ones that are going to have to enforce it also. So they have that opportunity anyway. So.
Yeah, Mayor, it's not a confirmation isn't required, but if they want to modify it, they can.
Okay. All right. That's fine. But as you're doing your briefings and bringing them to let them know the impact and why the decision was made. All right, thank you. Number four, appointments.
Move for approval.
Boards and committees. Motion, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Your reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Number five, any updates? Okay, number six, scheduling and meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder for council, March 13th is the next study session, and our next council meeting is March 17th. And also, we want to invite the City Council to our Fit City Challenge, which will be Saturday, March 8th at 9 a.m. at the Jefferson Recreation Center. And they will be having a kids' boot camp and an adult boot camp. So it's a family orientation, and encourage you to be there at 9 a.m. to pre-register, and the class begins at 10 a.m. Part of our Fit City program. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Do we have any requests to speak this morning?
No requests, ma'am.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and adjourn the study session, but I do need to call a special council meeting to order. So we are now in a special council meeting, Thursday, March 6, 2008. Item number one is take action on the following resolution. This is authorizing the sale of city-owned property located at 5415 East Randolph Road, Coolidge, Arizona. The sale price of $1,250,000. We do have the option to convene an executive session. Is that correct?
Mayor, we're not at requesting that at this time, but this is just if Doug wants to come forward, we're just seeking council approval to on this resolution so that we can enter into a contract.
The executive session will be with regard to a different issue, Mayor.
Okay. We really aren't seeking that.
Yeah. All right.
That's correct.
This item has previously been under contract with other entities in the past, and which have all fallen through. This is the most recent one that we have before us, and you have the price before you, Sunbelt Refinery Properties. So we're just seeking council approval to move forward with the sales contract on this one.
All right, discussion on it?
Second.
Motion by the Vice Mayor for approval?
Second.
Second by Scott. Any other discussion? Okay. Let me just check with the city attorney. I believe the Western Emulsions is in the asphalt construction business. They may compete with people that I lease property to. Should I stay out of this one? Or
Mayor, the question is if you have any financial interest, positive or negative, or any ownership interest, positive or negative, in this issue. What I'm hearing from what you told me, it doesn't sound like it, but that's the question that would be asked.
Okay. I don't see any. So, all right, I'll go ahead and vote on this one then, too. All right, we have a motion and second for approval of the contract. Third, to move into contract negotiations, I guess.
It's a resolution from the council, right. So we can move forward. Yeah.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
It passes unanimously. Next item then would be to convene an executive session, so I need a motion to do so. Is there a second? All right, a motion.
Come on.
Motion and second to enter into an executive session.
Thanks for doing
it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right.
He's sleeping over.